You're listening to the Whatcom Report, a Bellingham Regional Chamber of Commerce program in partnership with KGMI.
Good morning and welcome to the Whatcom Report. I'm your host, Guy Tregaso, President and CEO of the Bellingham Regional Chamber of Commerce. And we're chatting this morning on a really, I find, an interesting document. We've all been through this COVID pandemic and all of the different impacts that it has had, primarily on, I would say, the public health aspect being a pandemic. But so many impacts and nuances to this that we've all had to learn over the last 18 months. And the health department released the COVID-19 Community Health Impact Assessment. And so we're going to spend this morning's show going over what is in this assessment. It's a report and all of the different intricacies of some that are included and some that aren't included in the assessment. So stay tuned. We're going to be chatting with the County Health Director, Health Department Director, Erica Lautenbach. So stay tuned and we will be right back.
Now you can mow, dig, grade, haul, and more with the perfect solution for your property, a Branson tractor. Save your back and your wallet with one of our compact but powerful tractors here at Farmers Equipment Company. Stop by and choose from our full line of Bransons to take on your toughest tasks. With tractors from 19 to 55 horsepower, we have a Branson compact or utility tractor that is perfect for you. Want to use a rotary cutter to tame that tall brush on your property? You can do that. What about snagging a scoop from that pile of gravel to maintain your driveway free of potholes? You can do that too. Branson's 6-year warranty, along with our factory trained technicians, will make sure your new tractor is always running great. Get the tractor you want and the peace of mind you need at Farmers Equipment Company. To learn more, visit us online at farmersequip.com or stop by our locations in Linden or Burlington today. Farmers Equipment Company, serving the Pacific Northwest for over 86 years.
Who's ready for better sleep? Weiser's Furniture is the exclusive carrier of the insanely popular and well-loved mattress brand Nectar. The Nectar lineup is available at Weiser's Furniture, starting at $8.99 for a queen. Nectar is known for their forever warranty and 365-night trial. Purchase a Nectar mattress from Weiser's and receive a bedroom bundle worth $399, including pillows, sheets, and a protector. You've seen Nectar mattresses online. Purchase at Weiser's to get the same low price, free bedroom bundle and warranty, plus bring your mattress home the same day. Why wait 3 to 6 weeks for delivery? Weiser's can load your Nectar mattress in your car packed in an easy handle box. Nectar mattresses, exclusively at Weiser's Furniture. While you're shopping, take advantage of Weiser's clearance outdoor furniture, priced to move at up to 40% off. Enjoy the outdoors in the Pacific Northwest in comfort and savings. Shop Weiser's today for better sleep and big savings. Located on Birch Bay Linden Road in Linden or online at wisersfurniture.com.
Welcome back to the Whatcom Report, a program of the Bellingham Regional Chamber of Commerce in partnership with 790 KGMI News Talk Radio. And as promised, we're here with someone that I have now known as a friend, someone that we've been in the trenches, if you will, over the last year and a half plus regarding the pandemic. And so we have the Whatcom County Health Department Director, Erica Lautenbach, on the call this morning. Thank you so much for joining us, Erica. Thank you so much in advance for everything that you have done, that your team has done to lead this community through this. No matter what the federal decisions and state decisions and the complication and nuances of all of those, I think it's important to point out how amazing our county health department has been through this. And so you have been the leader of that. So I just want to say thank you and thank you for joining the show this morning.
Oh, Guy, thank you for the nice words and thanks for having me. I think this is a really important discussion and I look forward to having it with you.
Yeah. And so as I introduced, the COVID-19 Community Health Impact Assessment is what exactly? So if you were going to give it a 90-second, two-minute introduction, how would you classify this document, this report?
Yeah, so this is this is really a look at how COVID-19 exacerbated existing systemic challenges that we've had in our community associated with community health. In 2018, we produced a community health assessment, and we do that every 5 years. And over a process with our community organizations and community members, we work to identify 5 priorities. And those are the 5 priorities that we examined in this community health impact assessment to understand what COVID has done, both good and bad, for these issues. This is not a look at COVID itself, number of hospitalizations, number of cases. It's also not a look at the economic impacts. Our economic partners are doing that, so it doesn't look at businesses closed or opened, people laid off, et cetera. It's really these larger, broader community health challenges that we've known and have persisted over time, and looking at those.
Okay. And then these five, what would you, program areas, priority areas, determinants of health is probably a different way to look at it. These are things that the health department generally engages with outside of a pandemic, correct? Or am I wrong on that?
Yes, this okay. is the work of the health department, is to produce assessments, to highlight issues that we have in our community that impact health, and then develop coalitions and organizations that can work to address them.
You mean you're not just there to get us through a pandemic? That's not the whole point of having a public health system, is just to say, oh, we have a 1 in 100 year pandemic. Let's scale up this organization. There's other stuff.
There is other stuff. There is a lot of other stuff that we work on. And that is the reason why many of us are in this field, really to help people and to help change systems so people can have improved lives and quality of life.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, you know, hearing the presentation a couple of times now, and I appreciate you joining the show so we can have a dialogue about it, right? If there's a difference in receiving information in a presentation form versus just sharing words, sharing space, sharing a conversation. A lot of these things, they're not new. Like, we know these things exist. And some of these, as a chamber, as a business organization that believes in the betterment of our community, we're following and aware of some of this stuff too. So before we jump into, because I'd like to have a dialogue on each one of them, let's identify the 5. And so what are the 5 kind of general areas?
Yeah, the 5 areas. And none of this will surprise anyone who's listening, because we've all talked about them a lot. Kindergarten readiness, childcare, housing security, homelessness, and behavioral health.
Perfect. So, you know, when I'm looking at these 5 things, the one that we as the chamber, and I would say as a business community from a, again, the macro level, the broad community perspective, that we don't really engage with too much is the behavioral health. Now, there's a lot of outcomes, probably the best word, impacts that are generally associated with behavioral health that may impact the business community. But it's one that we don't, like, there are other experts in the room. We don't need to engage in this dialogue. So let's kind of take a little bit of a dive into learning more of the behavioral health components. And what does that all include? And what did we learn? Like, how did the pandemic impact behavioral health, mental health?
Yeah. Well, before I start with that, interestingly, behavioral health reasons are one of the primary drivers for absenteeism in the workplace. And mm-hmm. so, you know, making sure that people have the support and resources available to them not only impacts their lives and quality of life, but also the ability for businesses to retain and be fully staffed and retain a robust workforce. So
totally.
There are impacts. It's when we look at all of these issues, they don't operate in a vacuum. There's impacts to all of our systems in each of these. So,
yeah.
And I know you recognize that, but if
a bunch of spinning plates,
yes,
it's a bunch of spinning plates.
It's true. Yeah. When we look at behavioral health, and, you know, most of this, the listeners will intuit, because you've either experienced this yourself or have a friend or family member that has suffered during COVID from anxiety, depression. The uncertainty of the situation has created a lot of behavioral health challenges that were already existing but have worsened. So when we look at crisis situations, right, there were an average of 54 weekly calls for crisis level services prior to the pandemic. And during the pandemic, that increased by 74% to 93 calls a day. So that is that highest level crisis need and service.
And when you but say even, calls, what yeah. like is there, without disclosing anyone's specifics, what would that look like to kind of frame that, give an example?
These are calls to crisis service providers. They may be calls to inpatient services or to the behavioral health unit at the hospital. So we're really talking about people who are truly in crisis that may be considering ending their lives or are having a really intense and severe mental health episode.
Okay. And so this could be calls that their advocates or their counselors would call with somewhat like suicide hotline, like that type of scenario. Okay. So we've seen a 75% increase, or 75, rounding up. We're rounding. Yeah. Close enough increase in the number of calls. And is that's through the pandemic, most likely associated with the pandemic?
Yeah, certainly the pandemic has exacerbated that. And then when we look at at less crisis level, but still very serious challenges that people are facing, we had a mass, a very large survey of both young adults, age 18 to 26, and people who are over 27 or 27 plus, and they all reported very high rates of anxiety and depression. Actually, when we look at young adults, right, and this was last fall, when we look at young adults, 71% reported feeling anxious all or most of the time. 70% worried about the health of their family and 68% worried about their community. When we look at adults 27 plus, the anxiety was 43% of people were reporting anxiety all or most of the time. Like this is significant. This is life-changing for people to have that level of stress and anxiety and depression on a regular basis.
Totally. And I know it doesn't, I mean, different. I mean, like we've all experienced, again, what I have called and others have called like a shared trauma. And it's a layered trauma. It's a nuance. Like you might have someone who is sick that's close to you. You might be experiencing sickness. Your job might be in jeopardy. I mean, there's all of these nuances. But was there any kind of specificity in the reporting of why? Or was it just, do you check this box? Do you have anxiety? And it doesn't really matter beyond that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we did have a focus group in our various university and technical school and community college settings. And what we learned, especially from that younger population, is being away from friends, not being able to socialize, being isolated was particularly hard for them. Mm-hmm. They also were concerned about their future. You know, when you can't look past a week or a month, it's hard to be planning for what happens after you graduate and, you know, what kind of job you're going to get and where you can be. And so the anxiety was rooted in, and the depression was rooted in both the experience of being isolated from friends and family, but also in how do I even plan for a future? And what does that look like in this new era? So that we heard loud and clear from younger people.
Got it. Well, we are to our first break or second break, wherever we're at in the conversation, but we're ready for a break. And so we will be right back and we're going to continue having a dialogue on all of the aspects of the community health impact assessment. So stay tuned.
Free fun family activities. It's all part of Burlington's Hub City Harvest Festival, September 20th through the 26th. Fireworks show, live music, a scarecrow stroll, zucchini car races, a coloring contest and display, all free and presented by the Burlington Parks and Recreation Department and the Burlington Chamber of Commerce. Have you ever been on a scarecrow stroll? This is your week. Look for an army of scarecrows decorating downtown. Welcome fall and snap a few selfies while you enjoy shopping and eating at your favorite local businesses. Zucchini car racing is back in a big way. Get your free zucchini car kit now during business hours at the Burlington Library or Burlington Parks and Rec. Then enter your custom-built zucchini car into the September 25th races at the Burlington Visitor Center. That night, enjoy live music from the Troy Fair Band at Skagit River Park starting at 5, followed by fireworks. Burlington's Hub City Harvest Festival, a full week of free family fun, September 20th through the 26th. Details on Facebook at Visit Burlington WA. Want to reduce your natural gas bill or your energy consumption in general? Clean Air Heating and Cooling offers a 25% energy consumption reduction guarantee on select Lennox home energy improvements. And you can get up to $1,500 in rebates or payments as low as $132 per month when Clean Air installs your new Lennox system. Rethink your air quality today. Call or text Clean Air Heating and Cooling 24/7 at 360-398-9400 and online at callcleanair.com. Conditions apply.
Relive your favorites every day on Bellingham's newest radio station, 98.9 and AM 930 KBay. Kick off your workday with a 9 a.m. music marathon. Over an hour of commercial-free classics. Hit after hit from your favorite artists all day, every day. And the broadcast sponsor of the Bellingham Bells. Listen live online, 98.9kbay.com. Join the fun and be a part of Bellingham's newest radio station, 98.9 and AM 930 KBay.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
Welcome back to the Whatcom Report. I'm your host, Scott Tregraso, President and CEO of the Bellingham Regional Chamber of Commerce. And we are here with Erica Lautenbach, the Director of the Health Department. And I have a sneeze, and I'm going to really try and hold that in while I'm talking. And so we're talking about the community health impact assessment of COVID-19. And we've kind of introduced the topic. And so I want to talk on two of the priority areas, kindergarten readiness and childcare. And of all of the five areas, these are probably the two that we as a chamber are starting to engage in because of the workforce impacts. As we mentioned, behavioral health earlier has workforce impacts substantially, but as so does childcare specifically, but as well as kindergarten readiness. So Erica, what did we learn? Let's start with kindergarten readiness. What did we learn?
Yeah, and these are so closely aligned too, right? Quality childcare helps drive kindergarten readiness. But what we saw with kindergarten readiness, and we've known for years, and some of these issues are persistent and long-term, which is that about 50% of kids in Whatcom County are ready for kindergarten. And then when we look at BIPOC kiddos, only about 25% are ready for kindergarten. So this is one of the first places where we see disparities in support and services for families. And I want to say very clearly that these are not indicators of the competence of our 4- and 5-year-olds, right?
Right.
This is about the
support. This is a quality of care issue.
Yes. It's the support and services available to kids that are different among our BIPOC community, specifically our Hispanic, Black, and American Indian, Alaska Native kids. So there's work we need to do as a system to make sure that that kids are equally ready for kindergarten, because we know that if you start out behind, it's really hard to catch up.
Yep.
And we see this all the way through to high school graduation rates, you know, potential for earnings, criminal justice involvement, you name it. Kindergarten readiness is a very significant and key indicator for a trajectory of success or challenge in a person's life.
Yep. And I would just add a little bit more commentary to your statements. Like, I think a 20% readiness for BIPOC kids, we're failing them.
Yes.
I would also argue if we only have 50% of all kids, we're probably failing them too. Yes. Like we're failing all of us, everyone, all the kids and us too. So just wanted to add that commentary piece because I do think it's important to look at the nuances, but as a systems piece, this is a first step for me. And I think that's like, you'll see us as a chamber get engaged in this work.
That I'm so happy to hear it because these all are, I want to restate again that these are all system issues that we have known have been either very fragile or broken prior to COVID, and COVID has exacerbated them. But many of these were issues that we have known that have existed and persisted even prior to COVID. So the more good minds, the more sectors, the more people engaged in this work that we have, the greater our chances of success for actually fixing these broken systems and making sure that we're not failing kids anymore.
Right.
The other piece of this, if I can just share, is COVID, and this is directly associated with COVID, but one of the ways that we can help prepare kids for kindergarten is to make sure that we have good screenings available in case there are developmental delays or other learning disabilities that we can address prior to kindergarten. And COVID put a stop to a lot of those screenings and the services associated with them. Given all of the interruptions in services, we saw a 17% decrease in our single entry access service referrals between 2019 and 2020 due to the fact that many of these services could not exist during COVID. And that just sets kids further behind if we aren't able to screen for these things and then immediately getting kids into the supportive services so they can overcome those challenges early and they aren't trying to work through them when they're in middle school or high school when they've already fallen behind.
Mm-hmm. And so from a statistics perspective, the screening piece is certainly an aspect of that. And I think what statistics can we point to regarding kindergarten readiness from a COVID impact? Mm. Or are there, or do we just know it's more of like the screening if it's a deficiency in the system?
Yeah, it's those. And then it's also and I know we're going to talk about childcare too, but it's also the interruptions and decrease in the availability of childcare, which we know is associated with kindergarten readiness. So it's hard to tell you how kindergarten readiness has been, the specific numbers have been impacted in the last year. We'll know more soon, but we know that the systems that support kids in being ready for kindergarten were interrupted or decreased during the pandemic.
And I think one of the reasons we as a chamber, as a business community, are getting engaged in understanding kindergarten readiness is sometimes we're not going to understand these impacts for 20 years. This is a long game. Yes. And speaking of childcare, we've partnered with the Opportunity Council actually just prior to the pandemic with the Business Retention and Expansion Center here at the Chamber for childcare businesses. And so this is something that we're intimately engaged with and somewhat knowledgeable about, but knowing where to point our finger and say, go listen to Erica, go listen to David at the Opportunity Council. So what did we learn about childcare?
Childcare was, we were known in Whatcom County as a childcare desert prior to the pandemic, which means not enough slots for kids that needed childcare. And it has only worsened given the number of childcare facilities that have closed or remain not at full capacity due to COVID. And I can tell you, I think a couple of the most striking things we learned were given a recent childcare survey, a Whatcom County childcare demand survey earlier this year, we have learned that by 2025, 2 out of 3 kiddos who need childcare will not have it available. We will only have enough slot one out of three kids in 2025 unless we do something now and something significant. We also know that there is a shortage of childcare workers, like there's a shortage of behavioral health workers. Some of this is supply, and some of it's demand, and some of it's infrastructure. So none of these things has a silver bullet, but we do need to do work on both sides of this, right? Making sure that we have the supply of skilled childcare workers that can accommodate the incredible demand we know is coming. And the other key component of this is expense. And we know that childcare is really expensive, and the reduced options and high cost of childcare threaten family budget stability, especially for those families that even before the pandemic and may have lost financial stability during the pandemic, it was hard for them to afford childcare. And just to put a finer point on it, if you are trying to get your kid into childcare before kindergarten, it actually costs more than for an infant to preschool. It costs more for tuition than it does if you wanted to have an in-state student go to Western Washington University or Whatcom Community College. It is more expensive to enroll your kid in childcare than enroll them in a university in our area. It is shocking and astonishing. And what's different, of course, is there are loans and opportunities available to spread that expense out over time. If you go to a university, these bills are, you know, pay upon
immediate.
Immediate.
Yeah. And these are like these numbers, like this isn't calculated over the life of a kiddo. This is an annual cost. Like yes. You're comparing annual tuition at a 4-year institution and an annual, I mean, I guess it would be tuition for a childcare center.
Yeah.
So one of the numbers that I found so alarming in this was the void. Now we talk about, you know, what was it, 1 in 5? So we're short. What was it? Short 2 out of 5.
2 out of 3.
2 out of 3. If it's 200 kids that were short, that's 1 or 2 big centers can fix that gap. That's not what we're talking about here. So I see you looking for the number.
yes.
And it's just,
I can tell you.
Yeah.
That
what is that number?
There will be, there will be 2,700 slots available for 8,500 kids that need them. So yes. Unless we add 6,000 slots, we will have kids that will not have childcare available to them that need them.
Yes.
It's a big number, Guy. It's a
huge number. And thank you for finding that and pointing that out. But as we kind of enter the next break, I just want everybody to sit with that. 6,000 slots short. That is so substantial. And that's a conversation for another time of what the community is looking at doing to kind of fix that. But we need to take a break and we'll continue talking about other health impacts from COVID. So stay tuned.
Oh, so much better than that tent we stayed in last year.
We sure are putting this new RV to work. I'm glad we're here early because it seems that everyone has stepped up their mode of camping and, well, they're all here.
I told you not to post about it last year. It was supposed to be our little secret, but now everyone knows.
Well, Kent's Garden and Nursery's annual sale is just too good to be true. I had to show off all my fabulous new trees and shrubs. And now, well, we're the garden envy of all our neighbors.
And that's why we're camped out waiting for Kent's to open. I'm ready to finish planting my pond. And with 30% off everything but the dirt, I think we can buy enough greenery to create that living fence between us and you know who.
Oh, I see they're opening the gates. I got my trusty wheelbarrow. Let's go.
Don't miss Kent's annual fall save 30% off everything but the dirt sale. Friday, September 9th through the 19th. It's the biggest sale of the year at the largest nursery in town at Kent's Garden and Nursery on Northwest Drive in Bellingham.
The real issues affecting our important local farming community and the food we feed our families. The Farming Show on KGMI.
Powered by Alltrack. Learn how you can remotely control and monitor pumps, valves, wind machines, weather stations, flow meters, and other equipment from your phone. Visit ALTRAC.com today to learn more.
Join me, Dylan Honkoop, for The Farming Show every Saturday at 7 a.m. on KGMI.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city, but sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI Traffic Alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are. And if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
Hey, Mom, can you help me with a math problem?
Sure thing, hon.
Okay, how many legs do spiders have?
Oh, 8, I think.
So then how many legs would 1,000,000 spiders have?
Well, you would multiply 8 legs times... Wait, why are you asking me about spiders?
Because there's 1,000,000 of them in our basement. That's 8 million legs, right? Mom?
You can do the math, and then you can call Biobug. Biobug Pest Management, providing professional pest control services for over 2 decades. Visit biobug.com today.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
When it comes to your comfort and the air quality in your home, rely on the trained comfort specialists at West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electric with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome back to the Whatcom Report, a program of the Bellingham Regional Chamber of Commerce in partnership with 790 KGMI News Talk Radio. I am Guy Tregaso, President and CEO of the Chamber, and we're here talking with Erica Lautenbach, the County Health Department Director, on the COVID-19 Community Health Impact Assessment. And up to this point, we've talked about three of the 5 areas that the assessment has addressed: the behavioral health components, kindergarten readiness, childcare, and now the other two, which are comparable, they're similar, housing security and homelessness. And so the last two areas, if you will, that we were going to chat about regarding the assessment. So what are those important pieces? Because, you know, housing, we've not known that housing's an issue for years now. How did it get worse?
Yeah, it has gotten worse. And if any of you who are listening have tried to either buy or sell a house, it is a frenzy out there, which defies a lot of the challenges we're seeing with incomes increasing. So since 2016, the median home sale price has increased by 68%. And during that same period, medium household incomes have increased only 34%, so half of that. So we have this gap between what people can afford based on their income and what the housing prices are. And frankly, this isn't just limited to people buying houses. Rent is becoming more expensive as well, and the vacancy rates are so low right now. We in the spring of 2021, just a few months ago, the rental vacancy rate was 0.8% compared to a healthy vacancy rate of 5 to 7%. So not only is there a feeding frenzy for people to buy a house, but it is really difficult to even rent a place. And the average rent is over $1,200 a month, which is pretty expensive for a lot of families, given the medium household income.
Yeah, the price increase, the housing increase that you mentioned, what were the dates from when to when?
From 2016 to 2021.
Okay, so a 5-year increase over 60%, almost 70%. Just to kind of frame that a little bit, what we've seen in the lot, like, let's say during the pandemic, since the beginning of 2020, nationwide home prices has increased 17%. So it's just, we're seeing increases everywhere, but again, the impacts to our community have been substantial, especially the historic lows of inventory, both on the MLS as well as the rental market.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then we think about families that benefited from the eviction moratorium, right? And the funding that has been available to help support some expenses for utilities and rent and mortgages. And that has also been helpful to, you know, a lot of times we think about landlords as being these big corporate organizations, but a lot of landlords in Whatcom County are people who have one or two units that rely on that income in order to pay their mortgage on that house. So this isn't just about the renters, it's also to benefit people whose livelihood and income depend on those rental proceeds. So that has helped system-wide, but we know that the eviction moratorium is coming to an end. There's a lot of funding coming to our county, about $40 million to help offset the cost of people who've gotten behind and to support these the renters as well as the owners of these properties. But we do anticipate that that there will be some impacts to families. We know that based on extrapolating from state data that there's about a little over 4,600 people and households in Whatcom County that are at risk of losing their housing or at risk of eviction. So this all, you know, as we see, this all has ripple effects. And when we talk about housing security, it does impact our homelessness rates. It impacts families' ability to maintain a stable job, to educate their kids, to ensure that they can pay for childcare, et cetera, et cetera. They're all linked, like we said. Mm-hmm.
And so regarding homelessness, what are some of the, what did we learn? Like how did it's, I mean, from a visual perspective, and this is excluding a lot of the trauma and drama over the last year and a half, that's been very visual, very political. The rates of people experiencing homelessness, I would imagine have increased. I mean, I know the point in time count is one indicator.
Yeah. Yeah. So the point in time count for 2021, showed a 22% increase in individuals experiencing homelessness from 2020. And it was the highest, count since 2008. And I also want to caveat that resources were limited, volunteers were limited. This was not as full a scale a point in time count as we've had in the past, just given COVID. So I think we can safely assume that that's an underestimation of what we're seeing homelessness wise. And it's still very, very high.
Right.
Relatedly, and very concerning, concerning to the health department and our community, are families that are homeless, which includes kiddos. And we did see a 77% increase in families awaiting placement into housing between 2020 and 2021. So we're very concerned about all homeless folks and making sure that they have the support and resources they need, but especially these families where we have kids that are in cars or tenuous situations, and we're really trying to make sure that they are stabilized and supported as well.
Mm-hmm. I also, you know, serving, you know, as I'm a board member for Lydia Place, as I've talked about a number of times on the show, also engaging with the Mission's base camp through their kind of neighborhood advisory committee. And so I know more than I would say the average person. And one of the fascinating pieces that I always think about when we hear the point in time count coming out every year is it's words matter, kind of like that mantra that I've been trying to, you know, accustom myself to during the pandemic, but this is a point in time count. So yeah. We know that there are thousands of individuals experiencing homelessness in our community on any given year, but every February at that point in time, how many people are experiencing homelessness at that point in time? This is not a census. This is a snapshot. And so I think it's important to kind of frame that number, which I think was right around 850 mm-hmm. this year. Yeah. And so that has kind of like a little bit of a mountain range over the last decade or so. It is higher than it's been. And we know that again, the resources being what they are, available workforce, rules, safety precautions, that number's low. It might not be 1,000 or it may not have been 1,000 at the time, but it may have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's absolutely true. And we do have services. We do have services available, but we also have workforce shortages in this area. As you can imagine, burnout is very high in this population of staffing because it's just, these are really challenging jobs. Working with people who have lost hope and lost faith in our systems and have potentially really profound substance use or mental health or both issues that they're working through. So it's challenging to keep folks in this field, and we appreciate the partnership of those nonprofits that do this work, but know that given COVID and the restrictions and the need to separate folks in shelters and other situations, we just aren't able as a system and as a community to serve our homeless population in the way that we wish we could. And this is, of course, not just a Whatcom County problem. This is a national problem. And solving national problems at a local level is really challenging, especially when we are seeing our services be available and becoming more of a regional response in Whatcom County with fewer services available in neighboring counties. And so we're also trying to solve this for a region, and that puts us in a difficult position as well.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very different rumor that I would say than, especially looking at homelessness and those experiencing homelessness. Like we often hear like, oh, we're busing people to Whatcom County and Bellingham. And that's not the case from outside of the state and outside of the region, but being a bigger, just like retail, right? Like there's a service level here where you can purchase, you have more opportunities to purchase in our retail sector. We probably have a greater service serving a broader region here too, but probably not Seattle and Portland and California and a lot of the rumors, right? Like just in an essence of truth telling, I think is kind of important to kind of set that forward.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. That said, there is no homeless shelter in Skagit County. So right. If someone is seeking services, we are helping to alleviate the stressors both for Whatcom County and Skagit County.
Got it. And then just to be specific, the shelter currently that we have is the Lighthouse Mission Base Camp.
Yes.
So that's the box checking that we have that Skagit does not have.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we are to our next break, so stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Stay ahead of the storm. Get the KGMI AccuWeather forecast before you head out the door with the KGMI Morning News each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m.
Barron Heating and Air Conditioning believes in the importance of community. Hi, I'm John Barron. Supporting high school athletics is just one of the ways Team Barron gives back to the community it serves and calls home. This year, throughout football season, any game broadcast by the Cascade Radio Group will be part of a special award called Game Changer. Barron Heating will recognize outstanding contributions that players make each game and will name two players Game Changers. And at the end of the regular season, Barron Heating will award a $1,000 grant to one area high school on behalf of its game-changing players. As a leading heating, cooling, electrical, and plumbing service provider in the Northwest, Barron strives to be a game changer too. We do this by improving lives and making your home safe, healthy, and energy efficient. Barron Heating and Air Conditioning salutes all the high school athletes, the schools, and all those that support them. To see a list of game changers, visit barronheating.com.
I'm Ryan Seacrest. First responders are people who stand for a greater purpose. They will be there for you when nobody else is, to help you, your family, your community. This is their selfless promise. This is their sworn duty to protect, to serve, to help. They put themselves in harm's way for us. They come to the rescue at times when we need them most. First responders are making enormous personal sacrifices to keep showing up for us and fighting the good fight. Nearly 70% of all firefighters are volunteers. That means when they get injured or quarantined, they may not have a way to pay their rent or keep their family safe and fed. No matter who you are or where you live, when you call 911 and ask for help, first responders show up now. Let's show up for the people who show up for us every day and every night.
Go to firstrcf.org and make a difference today.
Welcome back to the Whatcom Report. We're here chatting everything COVID-19 Community Health Impact Assessment produced by the County Health Department. And so, Erica, we spent the last hour chatting about the five program areas. I guess my question now is, what's next? So if we can spend like about 3 minutes talking about, you know, we have this info, now what?
Yeah, well, the goals for our impact assessment were kind of threefold. First, it was a way to combine all of the data and information that our partners were gathering from there. So for example, the Opportunity Council had a very large survey of their housing clients to learn more about some of the housing security issues. And we were able to pull that data into this. So it's a centralized place for us to all have some grounding in what's happening and not having folks have to go search around for different sources, but really one place for it, right? The second goal was really to create a catalyst that by having this grounding document, by having us all see this data loud and clear and see the impacts and the suffering that people in our community are facing, would create a catalyst for action in our community. And third, that this document could create a blueprint for our funding and policy priorities. So we hope, and we have been engaging with elected officials all over the county. We have been having a lot of conversations about the American Rescue Plan dollars that are coming. It's a lot of money, and these will require both a lot of money and a concerted effort to make long-term sustained changes. So it's a great opportunity to really think about how we could use that federal money to impact these in a significant way, in a real mm-hmm. way. And also to gain interest and support from our community and more engagement. So we have many different partners working together and community members who say, I see myself in this work. I want to help. I want to be a part of this. So really to galvanize our entire county and all of our residents around these issues that we know will have impacts on all of us, both directly and indirectly. So that is the next. We have a task force that is looking at children and family issues. They will be putting out some recommendations at a more granular level at the end of this, at the end of September. And then our Healthy Whatcom Group, which is the entity looking at our community health improvement associated with these measures, will be putting out more specific recommendations at the end of the year. So this is the first step. This is the awareness step. The next yep. step is, what do we do? What are the action steps? And how do we fund these things? And that's what's coming next. And I'm really hopeful and looking forward to that next step.
Nice. And I think, as you mentioned, each one of those five pieces has partners or agencies or task force that are engaging in that dialogue and that work. So we have to take another quick break. So stay tuned and we will be right back to finish out the conversation.
Wow, what a year it has been. So many things are happening in the world. I would describe it as unprecedented and unpredictable.
You are right. There have been heat waves, forest fires, hurricanes, floods, and not to mention this virus. What's next?
I don't know, but didn't they just find a nest of giant Asian murder hornets?
All I can say is I'm ready for things to get back to normal and predictable.
Well, I can think of one thing that is always predictable. Fall is coming, and Linden Sheet Metal will be out to service our heating equipment. Their technicians are always helpful and provide reliable service.
That reminds me, our furnace needs replacing. I'd better hurry up and give them a call.
At Linden Sheet Metal, we know how everyone wants life back to normal. Until then, now is a great time to think about servicing or upgrading your furnace so you have reliable heat when the weather becomes more unpredictable. With rebates and financing with low monthly payments, we have systems to fit most budgets. Linden Sheet Metal, serving the Northwest for over 80 years.
Are you on Medicare?
Medicare's annual enrollment period is coming soon. Medicare Advantage plans and Part D prescription drug plans change every year. This year will be no different, so you might want to meet with an agent and review your current coverage to be sure you are on the plan that fits your needs best for 2022. Whether you're new to Medicare or have been on it for years, the agents at Vibrant USA are here to support you. Give us a call, find us on Facebook, or visit us at VibrantUSA.com.
Get informed and inspired with Saturday Morning Live on KGMI. Join a group of knowledgeable hosts as they present a variety of guests and viewpoints on issues important to our area and to you and your family. Sponsored by Asset Advisors LLC and Linden Sheet Metal, each Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome back to the Whatcom Report, a program of the Bellingham Regional Chamber of Commerce. I'm the host, Gad Tregaso, president and CEO of the Chamber. And Erica, thank you so much for joining the call this morning, or joining the show this morning. It's certainly some important work prior to the pandemic, but especially because of the pandemic and coming out of, hopefully, and through the pandemic, the community health, and I think we're all much more aware of what public health and community health mean because of this. So it's like just an interesting outcome of the pandemic as a whole. But I guess as we conclude the show, how can people engage? Where can people learn more? If they want to, the document's readily available. It's about 60-something pages, so hang on. It's a doozy. a lot of information in there, but what are some calls to action? What is a call to action as we kind of finish out the dialogue?
Yes. Well, if folks want to learn more, the best start, again, even though it's a doozy and there's a great executive summary, but it's available at www.whatcomcounty.us/COVID impact. And both of those documents are available there. And then I encourage members of our community to stay engaged with the Children and Family Wellbeing Task Force, to join our Healthy Whatcom group, to weigh in on these issues when the county council and our city councils are debating the ARPA dollars, the American Rescue Plan dollars, so we can make sure that that they hear community support for these issues as well.
Wonderful. Erica, thank you so much for your leadership and your work through the pandemic. And as we come out of the pandemic, engaging in some of this work as well. So thank you so much for your time this morning. And we'll see you next week.